Oh, we are way ahead of the curve. We are so far ahead of the curve. When we look back, you can't see anything but straight.
To me, that has to be a priority. It has to be a priority. That you have people out there who are looking for Obama's birth certificate are going to be making laws about my internet. Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. I'm T-Fab P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Pin the Tail on the Max.
And this is episode 151 of Countless Screaming Argonauts, the podcast of record. Today is Monday, August 16th, 2010. Max, it's time to apologize.
A correction is in
order. Correct. All right, sure.
A couple of episodes ago, we were talking about the first video ever on MTV, and we were wrong. A listener wrote to us and corrected us. You said it was
Blinded by Science.
Blinded Me with Science. Charles Dolby, I think, is the, mm-hmm. And I thought it was Lucy and Ramona in Sunset Sam, which he told us, this is Dr. Dan, was the first made-for-video song.
Right. And I'll tell you one thing. I had never heard of that song, or at least I didn't remember ever hearing it.
Really? Lucy and Ramona?
So I looked it up, and that was the stupidest video I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, I love that video. I am going to put it on my blog. Dan's going to convert it and send it to me. That was Michael Nesmith.
Yes. I did know that, and that was okay.
You approve of Michael
Nesmith?
But
I thought that was horrible.
Who was your favorite monkey?
You know, I really didn't have a favorite monkey. I wasn't really into them, yeah.
No kidding.
No, he wasn't, no.
I was a huge monkey fan.
I was more into the classical.
And my favorite monkey was Michael Nesmith.
Uh-huh. I do like him, I have to admit that. I just heard him within the last year on a radio interview.
Yeah.
He's done some really interesting things.
Yeah, he's definitely the coolest of the monkeys. Although I like them all.
Well, they had stuff going for him.
They did.
Mick Dolenz was the dumb one, I guess you would say.
I guess.
And Peter Tork. I mean, you know,
Peter
they
Tork
were modeled after the Beatles. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, they were the prefab four.
Mick Dolenz was Ringo Starr. And Michael Nesmith was
the only actual musician in the group.
Right, John Lennon.
Yeah. Anyway, I also wanted to bring up why I said pin the tail on the donkey. I'm drinking Montezuma's Pintail tonight.
Oh, okay. All right. I do have an update for you.
Yes.
Just a real, real quick one.
Wait, did we actually mention the name of the first? Oh, yeah, Charles. No. The first MTV song.
I don't know. Did we?
I don't think we did. That Dan told
Let's say
us
it.
What it was. Oh, Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
Right. Yep. And I'm very familiar with that video. I mean, it's a really good video. I like it. And it's a good song, too.
Yeah.
It's just not what we thought it was.
You know, so, I remember people saying, we've got to get away from literal descriptions, literal images of the lyrics of the song in MTV. And something like Video Killed the Radio Star, I think, was fairly literal. And I was thinking, no, that's okay. I like people's interpretation of the lyrics. But they moved away from it anyway. And I have to say that eventually they got it right. It was kind of a cross between a live performance and images evoked by the lyrics.
Right,
and,
sure.
Before they stopped playing music videos on music video television, I think they kind of got it right.
Yeah, I would agree. So anyway, now to an update.
All right.
I just, again, a pat on the back to Countless Streaming Argonauts for being ahead of the curve.
Oh, we are way ahead of the curve. We are so far ahead of the curve. When we look back, you can't see anything but straight.
Right. Well, a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about, and we spent some time talking about the issue of a police department using Google Earth.
Yeah.
Not a police department, a town using Google Earth to find illegal swimming pools.
Right. It was 150 or 149.
Right. Well, over the past week in the Freakonomics blog on the New York Times, they mentioned the fact that there's a report out now that use of Google Earth for purposes like that is growing exponentially.
Sure.
And that they're using it to do everything from catching tax evaders to marijuana growers.
All right. I can understand how they could do marijuana growers, but how do they find tax evaders with Google Earth?
My guess is that, you know, that if you have a town where you put in a pool and don't report it, it changes
the property
value on your taxes.
Yeah.
That was what I thought of.
Yep. Could be.
And also, there is a PhD student at George Mason who is creating, using Google Earth, creating the world's most authoritative annotated map of North Korea.
Interesting.
Which is something that has not been done before. And additionally, Google has been sued by both South Korea and Germany regarding
privacy issues.
Privacy issues, yeah.
Did you see that the Google headquarters were invaded in South Korea by the government?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they confiscated data collected by a couple of the Google cars or some of the Google cars.
Uh-huh.
Because Google admitted that they scooped up accidentally more data than they were looking for.
Right.
As they traveled the towns, any wide open private network sent
right.
their data, and they had data.
And they were logging those private networks.
They were collecting it. They said they purged it. I think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But they did admit that they accidentally collected data from private networks.
Well, you know, it raises an interesting issue, just in general. I mean, you know, you have the ability, if you have set up a network, you have the ability to make it private.
Right.
By passwording it and stuff.
Right.
And as a consumer who enjoys wireless internet, I think that I have the right to know where wireless internet exists. So if Google is going around collecting the data, shouldn't it be the individual's responsibility to privatize their...
To lock it down?
Yeah. Shouldn't it?
I don't think I have an argument with that. It's kind of like leaving your front door open.
Right. And if somebody walks in and steals something, yes, it's still stealing. But, you know, you have to shoulder some of the blame. I mean, you know, I've heard situations where if a car is stolen and you can prove that it was unlocked, then insurance companies will give you trouble about that.
Well, and I want to state categorically for the record that I do not believe that if you leave your car unlocked, if you leave your bicycle unlocked, or if you leave your front door open, that that is in any way tacit permission to steal from you.
No, I'm not saying that it's permission to, but what I am saying is that you do have a responsibility. I mean, it's like, you know, it's that age-old thing. I've said this a lot of times. You know, a person buys a house at a reduced price because it's near the airport and then starts to complain that the airport makes
there's a lot of noise. That's bad. Yeah, you did ask for that. But I don't believe we have a God-given right to others' property.
No, it is property rights. You're right. It is property rights, and that is really true. But, like I said, I think that you have to have a responsibility.
Well, yeah, I think you're foolish not to. I think if I leave my front door open, literally wide open, and someone walks in the house, and I come downstairs and find them in the house, I don't have an argument to say they're breaking and entering, say that they're illegally. I think I still have the right to ask them to leave.
Sure.
But they, an open door is an invitation to walk in. Doesn't mean they can steal from me.
Right.
But
well, I mean, I think that's it. I think that's just the key. You know, what does it mean? And I think you need to take responsibility for it.
Well, in a practical sense, there's no question. You know, if you have a screen door on your house and you lock it and someone puts their foot through it and comes in.
Right. That's different.
That's different. Even if it's just a screen door, they don't have a right to do that.
Right.
Which gets me to a bigger thought that I had this week that I hadn't planned on talking about, but we can throw it out if you're interested.
Sure.
Which is the idea, the basic concept of rights. I got thinking about the and I forget whether it's the Declaration or the Constitution, that they are, it's the Declaration, that they are endowed with their, by their Creator with certain inalienable rights.
Inalienable rights, right.
The concept of rights, and this goes back to something George Carlin said, is a human creation. According to Carlin, there's no such thing as a right. We have rights because we declare that we have rights, and everybody else goes along with it.
Right.
The world is what it is. A mountain lion doesn't care whether you have the right to life. It's going to be you anyway.
Right. But also, I mean, across societies, you know, what one society feels that you have a right to, another society might not.
We feel that women have the right to an education.
And to vote.
And to vote.
And other, in other countries, that's not, they're not considered an inalienable right.
Right.
For sure.
Exactly my point. We declare it. We affirm it and establish it. But, and some people will give you God. God gave us these rights. But God didn't tell the mountain lion.
Well, this kind of leads me into another thing that I wasn't thinking about talking about, but I'll bring it up here too.
All right.
There was an article in the paper about the Pew Internet and American Life Projects, which did a survey, and basically more than half Americans don't think that broadband internet access is a priority in this country.
Hmm.
And I was thinking about it a lot, and I was thinking about – well, I was thinking about – funny that you mentioned George Carlin.
Yeah.
That video clip of his – one of his last shows where he railed against the government, and basically he said – you know, the government wants to keep us stupid. They want us just stupid enough to want to go to work and do stuff, but not question what they're doing and not question that the money they get.
My hero, George Carlin, turned very cynical in his older years.
Yeah, he did. Well, you know, I once got into an argument on Facebook with somebody about libraries.
Yeah.
The person saying, well, you know, the, when the economy is tight, they should just get rid of the libraries. We don't need them. And to me, information is an inalienable right.
Okay.
We have a right to information. All right? We have a right to radio shows that we don't have to pay for that give us news. We have the right to television shows that provide us with news and entertainment. We have the right to libraries. Because if you start charging for information, then only people who are rich can afford it.
Right. And information is powerful and important.
Right. And I think that the internet falls under that same guise. I'm not talking about people playing Farmville on Facebook.
Right.
I'm talking about the ability to get on the internet and look up a health issue or to find out about a public service that's available, like a park or, you know, directions to that or something about a library or museum, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that has to be a priority. It has to be a priority.
Well, I agree with you. The advantage of the internet, accepting porn, is useful information.
Right.
And while it's not in our Constitution that we have a right to free information, it's actually in law. We have the Freedom of Information Act.
Mm-hmm.
Information is valuable. There's no question about it. How many people are making their internet fortunes by peddling some sort of a compilation of information?
Right.
So yeah. I agree with you.
I was shocked at the numbers, and I was saddened. You know, they're talking about 45% of the people that were polled don't think that the government should put any effort at all into making broadband affordable to everyone.
Oh.
And that's just, you know, that's just, it's stupid.
It is short-sighted. People, I keep thinking about, the GI Bill. And how much it benefited this country after World War II.
Oh, sure.
They educated all these
people. Those people would triumph themselves as the world's greatest
generation.
And that's why. That was
one
of the reasons why.
Yeah, they got information. They got educated. And now we have democratic, small d, information. Every bit of knowledge in the world is available to everybody.
Right.
And that's a hugely great thing.
Oh, sure it is.
In fact, I saw or heard somebody saying the other day that porn is no longer the number one.
No, I told you that. Yeah, that it's not.
Yeah.
It's great.
Absolutely. We knew it was going to come eventually, no pun intended. And and it's happened. And it's and it's fabulous, and we should celebrate it, and we should advocate it. And the people who don't say that free information should be a priority are the same people who say, keep your government hands off my Medicaid.
Right. They are. They absolutely are. And that it just sickens me. It bothers me. It just drives me nuts.
But the policymakers know it. The policymakers know the value of it. The only question that exists between policymakers and intellectuals and average Joes like you and I that think about things is, do we have a completely free internet highway, or do we have a tiered system with a fast lane and more expensive versus less expensive?
Well, what I was going to say to you is I'm not sure that the lawmakers get it. I'm not sure that group does, because of A, certainly all of the misinterpretations about net neutrality.
Well, all right. Yeah, I'll grant you that not all of the lawmakers, not everybody in Congress.
Right.
There are still Ted Stevenses. But I saw a commercial.
And also, you know, there was a lawsuit regarding 4chan. And
yeah.
they posted some of the questions that the guy who was the founder of it.
Yeah.
And from the questions, it was obvious that the person doing the questioning didn't have a clue as to the nature of the internet, as to the nature of some of that stuff. They just didn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me nervous that you have people who don't know, that you have people out there who are looking for Obama's birth certificate,
yeah,
are going to be making laws about my internet.
Well, I think that's a good point. I believe that the number of idiots is 20% or below, and that they don't have an impact.
But they're a very loud 20%.
They're a loud 20%. And as much as I hate libertarians, I don't think they cross the libertarian border to a very high percentage.
Uh-huh.
There are libertarians who are screaming the same thing you're screaming.
Right.
Give us all of this stuff. We want it. It's free. It's ours. It should be.
It should be. It should be. I've got one other thing I just wanted to touch on, and I know that you had some stuff.
Right. I got tons.
So go with it.
Well, I want to talk about, because I spent most of yesterday evening watching, and I have on other days, Whale Wars.
Uh huh.
have you watched Whale Wars?
I have seen it. Yes.
Yesterday.
It's sort of like PETA Goes Rogue.
Yeah, it's Greenpeace in action, sort of.
Right.
There's three ships under the umbrella of an organization called Sea Shepherd, which is dedicated and has been for 6 years to disrupting the Japanese whaling fleet.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese whaling fleet claims that they're doing scientific research, that they're checking this stomach contents of the whales and things like that. They have these amazing ships. I'm totally ignorant of the sea, but I understand the difference between a 50-year-old ship and a brand new millions of dollars ships. So these three ships go out. There's one named the Bob Barker. There's one named Steve Irwin.
Uh-huh.
And there's one, an Australian guy, built his own ship, cost him $1 million or whatever, called the Audie Gill, A-D-Y-G-I-L. And it looks like the frickin' bat boat.
Right.
Okay. It really does. It's very fast. These Japanese whalers are very fast, and they turn incredibly. Well, last night I watched the episode where this one Japanese whaler, and I'm biased. I don't know where to start with this. The Japanese claim that they're just minding their own business, and the Sea Shepherd people admit that they're trying to disrupt the whaling fleet. They throw stink bombs on the Japanese ships, some sort of acid which clings to everything and stinks. This one guy in particular, the captain of the Audie Gill, hopes to foul their rudders. They try to tuck in behind the big ship, what they call a factory ship. And they have these three harpoon ships, which are pretty big and very fast and very agile, and they have these modern harpoons. And they kill the whales, and then the factory ship processes them. And,
right,
and the goal of of the whale wars, the Sea Shepherds, is to park themselves behind the back of the factory ship so it can't load the whales. It can't stop the harpoon ships from killing them, but it can stop it from being profitable. And so the Adigil was out in this episode that I've been longing to see and chased them down for a while and basically ran themselves out of gas. And they're going to park in the – and this is all done in the Antarctic Ocean. They're going to park there and wait for 3 days for one of the ships to come by and refuel them. And they're literally – they're waving goodbye to their friends who are going to go follow the whaling fleet. And they're sitting there on top of their little boat, and this Japanese whaling ship takes a right-hand turn and drives right through them.
Mm-hmm.
Cuts off the front of the boat, cuts off about 6 feet of the bat boat.
Which immediately sinks.
No, it's amazing. It continues to float. One guy gets a sore back, but everyone else is alive, and nobody gets thrown into the water. It's absolutely amazing because they take the camera in there, and you can, you know, shoot the camera view right out the front of the boat where the ocean is coming in. But it's got pontoons, and the rest of the compartments are airtight. And anyway, it's still floating. Eventually, they rescue the crew, and they try to tow the remainder of the boat back in, and eventually it does sink. But they turned and drove into this boat. There's no question about it. And right. The Japanese whaling fleet says, you know, well, there was confusion, and there was an issue of right-of-way. And if you watch the film, it cuts the boat in half. It is absolutely mesmerizing film.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to feel about these people because they're probably doing illegal acts, although they claim they've never been sued, they've never been arrested, but their intention is to harass the whaling fleet. And I find myself rooting for these disruptors. And then I see this ship cut in half by a super fast, super modern ship. And I just like all doubt sort of wanders away from my mind. These Japanese whalers are bad people.
Right.
And that's a lot, I know, to say. But then there's another sequence where there's four ships, a scout ship and three harpoon ships, and they start doing a circling maneuver around one of the boats. I forget whether it was the Steve Irwin or the Bob Barker, which I think, by the way, are stupid names for boats. And the Sea Shepherd people decide to run the gap between two of these fast Japanese harpoon ships. And, of course, they collide, and it puts a hole in one of the Sea Shepherd's ships. But they make it out, and they keep going, and they stop the whaling, and I can't help it. I'm rooting for the whales. I don't want them to kill whales. They mention in the show that the Japanese kill the baby whales first because they know the mothers won't leave. Now, to me, if ever there's an indication of an animal that deserves to be protected, that's an indication right there. We talked before about some animals deserve to be respected for their higher intellect.
Right.
Anyway, I'm done ranting.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's an example of higher intellect, though, because a grizzly bear will do the same thing, and I don't think anybody would associate grizzly bears or black bears, for that matter, with higher intelligence. It's an instinctual kind of thing. But that having been said, I mean, that's not the point of what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, for whatever reason, and you and I had this discussion off air, for whatever reason, you know, we look at cute animals like chimpanzees and whales and dolphins, and we ascribe some human feelings, characteristics, whatever, to them, and that makes it really difficult to think about them being harvested in that way, but don't have the same feelings about cows or chickens or buffalo or deer for the most part or, you know, whatever.
I read an article, one of these whales, I think it was the blue whale, has been harvested down till there's only 1% of the population left.
Right.
And you remember your book there, The Short History of Just About Everything.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about the dodo.
Right.
And how sort of left to our own devices, human beings will just kill everything.
Right.
And so I guess I'm taking a stand and I'm saying I'm rooting for the Sea Shepherds. I don't want them to kill whales.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue. I'm not going to sit here and say, I'm all for killing whales. Because I'm not.
Yeah, I didn't think you would be.
You know, but there are, to me, it just seems like there are so many factors into, you know, so many factors that kind of play into this. Like I said, you know, you can rant and rave about going out there and killing whales, but what do we do to the population of tuna? What do we do to the population? A lot of
sharks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have out here on the north, you know, in the northeast coast, we have had things like lobster bans because mm-hmm. they've been harvested too much. You know, we've had other things like that. I mean, that's the same sort of thing. But you know, a lobster isn't as cute as a whale.
No, but I will go out on a limb and say that if we're down to 1% of the natural lobster population, we need to stop catching lobsters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it is. For our own sake, we need these animals to exist.
Right. Well, I guess
the thing again. A short history of just about everything. He talks about how we've over-harvested the sea to the point where we're taking sort of less useful fish because it's all that's left.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to argue that you know that point either.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to take the other side.
No, I know you're not. It's an interesting thought, you know, because there's also, you know, there is some cultural issues about whaling.
Sure.
You know, I mean, the United States stopped whaling, a long time ago.
Right.
Because we found other alternatives to the products that we used for them. If
we don't need to whale. The thing is, whaling in Japan is profitable. Mm-hmm. It said certain whales are worth $1 million apiece. That's what's going on here.
Right.
There is something called the Institute of Cetacean Research, which is the name of the group that's sponsoring these Japanese whalers.
Right.
And they're calling it research. But when you watch them harpoon a whale and drag it by its tail up the back of this processing boat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I've seen the pictures, and they're gross, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, when was the last time you went to a place where they showed you how they make hamburger? You know what I mean?
Excellent.
I mean, you know, they hang the cows by their back legs and slit their throats, and the blood, they, you know, they bleed out.
Right.
While hanging there. Same thing with pigs. You know, so every time you eat one of those gorgeous baby back ribs, you know, that's what you're.
It's a legitimate point. I'm not a vegetarian. I feel differently about whales than I do cows.
Right, I know, and it's a tough one. You feel differently about chickens too.
Right,
and we get two different products from chickens.
Really? Besides chicken, what do we get?
Eggs.
Oh yeah.
So
we don't have to kill them for the eggs.
Right, right. But I mean, it doesn't mean that we treat them any better.
No, you're right. You're right, and we should. We don't need to abuse chickens to get eggs.
Right.
And I have a certain grudging respect for vegetarians and ovo-lacto vegetarians because of that.
Well, listen, our time is about up, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is.
And I do have one note to go out on, a good one.
All right.
Last Friday was August 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th. Okay. In in England, Lowestoft, England, there was an air show.
Yeah.
And there was a 13-year-old boy who was watching it. And at 1:13 in the afternoon of Friday the 13th, which in military time is 13:13. He was hit by lightning and survived.
Yeah.
Two other spectators who were near him were treated for minor injuries. They were watching the air display team, the Red Arrows. There was a flash of lightning and people hit the ground. And this kid got hit, got burned on the shoulder, but survived. August 13th at 13:13.
Yeah. It's weird, I admit. You know the story about Apollo 13.
About what happened to it, yes.
Yeah, it was the 13th mission. It was launched, I believe, on the 13th day at the 13th hour.
And Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I personally refuse to be superstitious.
Trisodecaphobia.
Intellectually, I don't buy it. I think
we listed a show about that way back in our infancy.
I think it was our 13th episode.
When we were first struggling to find a voice.
No, seriously, I think it was.
It might have been. Trisodecaphobia.
Yeah. But do you think that it's relevant that he was 13 on the 13th hour, the 13th minute?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, if you're going to be there, if you're going to be one of those poo-pooers who say, oh, I don't do stuff on Friday the 13th because of bad luck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of my sisters was born on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
So that worked out pretty good for us.
Right.
You know, and so I think, I think you can find
a good or a bad out of 13th, too.
Uh-huh. You can find a good or a bad out of anything.
My point.
It's a lucky 13th. Lucky 13th.
Yeah. You learned from the Da Vinci Files about the history of Friday the 13th.
Right.
I think it's interesting. It's definitely a thing that makes me go, But
and I'm happy for the little kid.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I'm not. My intellectual brain refuses to accept that there was anything more than a coincidence.
Okay. Well, that's fair. And on that note, I think we bring this podcast to a
screeching halt.
Screeching halt, or a
classic
gentle close. Or a classic close, or whatever.
All right.
And I will talk to you soon.
Good night, goodbye, and good luck.
Good night.
My primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason.